Hi, thank you for joining us. This is That's What She Said. My name is Terilyn Lawson.
And I'm Claire Joseph Meyer.
Today we'll be talking about character. The title of today's program is Character of Good. This came to me not with having any particular person or event in mind. I think it's just been an assessment of conversations that I've had, not so much with students or not specifically to students, but people in general. There seems to be a disconnect between how you build character, and a part of that is, well, what makes a person good? I think there are these emphases. And we said earlier, right, Claire, that it kind of links to the worthy component, right? Mm-hmm. The being good. And I think that a lot of times we are so focused on being good or thinking ourselves good and that being enough, but not actually demonstrating the good that we say we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I take a different view anyway. Maybe controversial, I know, because of how much people say I'm a good person or they're a good person. I don't think so. Meaning, I don't think we are good. And I know I take a very Calvin stance on this. I think that we do good. And then in the doing, that helps us through. But the completion of the good doesn't come until the end, when sin is no more. I think it's nearly impossible, if not so, to be good while sin still exists.
I was just reflecting when you were talking about connecting this back to our first podcast episode on being worthy. I think you quoted the scripture in that episode about Jesus saying, "Why do you call me good?"
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so, I think it is so interesting on two levels. One, this question about being good and doing good, and are those connected or not? Is it enough for me to have my idealized internal values set if that doesn't actually come out into the world in consistent ways that love and serve my neighbor? And also, I think our fairly universal cultural obsession with being good.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, the importance is that I can demonstrate that I'm a good person or claim that I'm a good person. And if anybody says that I'm not, I will feel defensive and horrible about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think grappling with those two things together helps frame why it's so important for us, even with evidence to the contrary in our lives, right? For us to ultimately come back to like, but I am good. Mm-hmm. I am a good person. And that becomes so important that it makes us defensive about conversations like this.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I don't have any problems with, I tend to think that I can keep my ego in check, or that my ego has been kept in check because mm-hmm. of life circumstances that, like, this happens. And so, like, no ego, or become mindful of being humble. Mm-hmm. Like, how can I remain just like on the ground?
Yeah.
Very stable. So when it's like a conversation about being a good person, I tend not to place a lot of emphasis on that. Mm-hmm. Like, am I a good person? I would say, I know I can do good, because it's kind of the absolute stance that I take. Mm-hmm. If you do bad at all, does that negate goodness? Like, does that negate you being good? Like, mm-hmm. is it a completion of that? You know, so if sin and evil exist, if you engage in sin and evil, can you be good? And if so, is there that ratcheting up of points where you can erase that? And theologically, no, right? There's nothing we do that makes us good. It's who we know and who we claim that help us to get to that point. But we don't see the fulfillment of that on earth. Like, that's not until end of times, when mm-hmm. sin has completely been renewed. So going back to your point, having that difficult discussion about, you're not necessarily good. I mean, as long as you engage, do acquiesce to anything that is not good, anything that is against God or justice or people's well-being, then that in and of itself says that you're not good. But can you do good? Well, yeah, definitely.
Right. Sometimes. Right. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Well, and I think I'm feeling very similarly about this as I did in our conversation about worthiness, is I feel like it's a rat race to pursue this idea that I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where ultimately it returns the focus to the self
mm-hmm.
instead of the other, mm-hmm. our neighbor. And it reminds me of the questions when I was working with our congregation through the book, Layla Saad's book, Me and White Supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about the difference between virtue signaling and kind of performative allyship from white people and action that actually contributes to the liberation of black and brown people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like, if you are a white person facing this question, this is the filter. Does this actually contribute to mm-hmm. right the liberation of black and brown people? Or are you just trying to show people that you're woke about this issue? Right? I mean, and it's been really interesting because you can apply that lens in a variety of circumstances when it comes to this question of like, am I good?
Mm-hmm.
Be like, well, is this about whether or not you're good? Mm-hmm. Is that the focus of this conversation?
Yeah.
Or is that the end game?
Yeah.
Is to demonstrate your goodness or to justify yourself via convincing us that you're good.
Yeah.
Or convincing yourself that you're good. Like, can we reframe? Could this be? And this is where, for me, your question about character
mm-hmm.
and humility is, I really associate character with humility and people who, there's just that gravitas of presence.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't think is about like, well, people with character are the real good people, right? Mm-hmm. And the rest of us
are just flailing
and trying to develop character. But once we do, we'll also be good. Because I feel like when I think about the word character, is I think about people who seem to have that orientation that isn't about establishing the dominance of their goodness, right? Mm. Or proving their righteousness. They're just this almost... not always quiet, but I just associate it with not being brassy and performative or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's just who they are in the world is going about doing,
mm-hmm.
showing integrity, showing that follow through or plumb line between what they say are their values and then what they're actually doing and who they're being in the world.
Yeah. There are 2 points I want to make. Hopefully it doesn't like wane on, but one, I heard a sermon and it was about the thinking, doing, and being.
Mm.
And people fall somewhere on, well, they fall into either category, right? One of the three. Like, you can be all of the three as far as how you process information or how you think people are oriented. But for the most part, you have like a dominant leaning. And I had a conversation with my sister. I think we were like actually in church, not really listening to the sermon, but we were discussing it. Just happened to be in the middle of the sermon. Anyway, I was saying, no, you do good and therefore you can become good. And mm-hmm. her position was, no, you are good and that allows for you to do good. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't agree. I don't agree. But then that's the argument, right?
Yeah.
Are you it first and then that allows you to do, or is it in the doing that allows you to be?
Mm-hmm.
And then some were like, well, do you think it and then you're able to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you thinking it and then you're able to be it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, wow. Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
yeah.
just... But and that's the conversation. Like, you have people that are coming from different angles about where goodness stems from, right?
Yeah.
And it's, I think there's a definite answer for that. but you know, it's a conversation that's worth having. So at least you'll know where that person stands, and then you can go like, okay, so you're heavily centered on this area.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is, what you said reminded me of The Prom. It's playing on Netflix now, but it was a musical. And not to give away anything, but the premise is these Broadway stars are not doing well. They have like this huge production and everyone, the critics are saying like, hey, this is a great production if only it didn't have those stars. And so the question is like, wait, why? And it's like, well, you have bad PR. Like people think that you're just rotten, mean and nasty. And so they set about improving their image by doing a good deed or finding a cause to herald. And so their whole motivation isn't to help. Their motivation is, how will this make me look good? Mm-hmm. And not even to be good, like not even to have that full transformation, but just to appear to be good. And I think, too, that happens a lot with people. It's like, well, let me give money and let me say how much I've given. Let me come to this groundbreaking for this hospital and just take a whole bunch of pictures. You know, it's just all the appearance of. Right. And you get that text in the Bible where the Pharisee is like, oh, Lord, thank you that I am not like that individual over there. And, you know, the appearance of propriety and religiosity.
So this is reminding me of, so Susan Cain wrote a book called Quiet, The Power of Introverts. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that I haven't finished the whole book. I'm sure she's not equating introversion with character strictly, right? Although, as
so, an introvert, I don't know. You had to finish reading that book and tell me how it ends.
I'll let you know. But she was speaking to the cultural evolution in the United States with the advent of basically television entertainment and how we sort of, there was this early sense that character used to be really important to Americans as a concept. And then performance became increasingly important. How you sort of perform, whether or not you entertain the people around you, was linked much more to sort of likability or appeal than your real life character, right? Which I feel has become exponential with the advent of social media. While there's many gifts to our modern technology, I think the degree to which we live in a performance culture has just ratcheted up the dial. And so this tension that people are feeling about image and I need people to know how good I am being much more important about whether or not I am actually.
Because that doesn't matter. It's just, as long as I look it, it's good.
What's inside?
As long as I look it, it's good.
Oh, my gosh. Right. Which I realize is at odds. I feel like I said earlier that we feel so much more like we're defined by what's. Like, I know the truth about myself, right? My intention was X. So even though my impact was Y, I'm a good person. And again, this is why I just end up coming back to like, it's a rat race. Like, stop obsessing about A, whether you are a good person on the inside. I mean, I care. I care about who people are on the inside. But I don't know if these words have been helpful to people, right? It's just like, what is good anyway, while we're at it, right? Like, who's defining good? Who benefits from good?
Good as opposed to bad, but then there are degrees, right?
Yeah.
Because what is good for someone else and not even, what is good for someone else isn't good for another person. And that doesn't get mentioned a whole lot.
No.
Because we talk about the greater good. And it's like, when you say the greater good, that means that someone's not going to be happy with this. Right. Someone is not going to benefit from the greater good.
And it's who just gets that, to define the greater good? And
those in power, right? Mm. It's like, well, this was a good, you know, ends justify the means, right? This was a good outcome based upon what we set out to do.
Yeah.
Really? So blowing up that whole village was a good outcome. I don't think the village feels the same way. It's like, yeah, well, they didn't get a say.
That's right. Well, yeah, exactly. We blew them up, so they're not contributing to the story anymore. And that's what they say, like the conquerors write the story, right? I mean, history has always been in the hands of whoever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that in our culture now, that what was believed to be good as Americans, I guess being more specific, that maybe that wasn't good. Mm-hmm. And not just for those who were on the receiving end, but even for those who thought themselves victorious.
Which I guess is that we were talking before recording this of like, are we going to acknowledge that we're recording this the day after the Capitol was stormed?
Well, right? There it is.
And there it is. I mean, what you're saying about the disconnect, right, between perception or story about what's good and what is actually there or not. What mm-hmm. is sort of a figment of good imagination, right? Of like our story about goodness and our perception of goodness. And then how we can have disparate realities
yeah.
about whether this quote unquote goodness we're describing is a figment, right, of a collective story.
Yeah.
Or whether that's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I in social media since in this, you know, like basically 24 hours, I've just seen this explosion of dialogue and conversation about is anybody surprised about this? Who is surprised that this mm-hmm. happened? Who is surprised how it shook out? Like who is surprised? and then the excavating of that, mm-hmm. right? Like if you are somebody who was surprised by this or is still grappling with this, why?
Mm.
Can we tell, like, why? You have a deep defense, like very deeply entrenched, right? Like, frame for your reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And story about, in this case, the goodness of America, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the huge mythology.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Around America, which is.
Talk about debunking myths. Wow. Harkening back to the last podcast.
Mm.
Well, okay. So then, how do you develop character? How do you build? How is one's character built? So if we're not concerned with being good, if we're concerned with accessible ideals like justice mm-hmm. and peace and compassion, things like that, how do we get there?
Mm-hmm.
Can be a question. I'm not necessarily, well, I will provide an answer, but but just to like mull that over a little bit, because the word character doesn't really come. Even still, it's like good character, right? Mm-hmm. We still have this, a qualitative aspect of it. Like you can have character, but I think a lot of times the assumption is when you say, "Oh, he has character," mm-hmm. it's a positive, mm-hmm. right?
You know? Unless you're saying, "What a character."
Very in a very ironic and sarcastic tone.
Right. If you are a character, that's not but if you have character,
yeah, right? thanks for that distinction, right? And I think character comes through adversity. So I guess how do you get it? Adversity. When faced with a difficult task, one where you have to choose an option that benefits solely you or benefits maybe someone else, and you do not see, not only do you not benefit directly, mm-hmm. like maybe, you know, positive vibes, things like that, but no, you don't see the product, right? Sure. Or let's say what you did was a, I'm seeking not to say good. What you did was admirable,
mm-hmm.
but how you went about it was more than deplorable, sure. Sure. You know, but it's through this, again, adversity that we build the character.
Mm-hmm.
When faced with an obstacle, how do we go about conquering it?
Well, and I think hearkening back to your earlier point, facing these crucible moments while others aren't watching, I think it's really difficult both to ascertain your own character and to build character when you're in a performative situation
mm-hmm.
and you're really aware of what might, you know, and I don't know, maybe not everybody is as neurotic as I am about this, but like, what is everyone in the room going to think about what I do? Right. And how do I orient myself to almost like you're in this hall of mirrors, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, I want to shine my light just right so that it like bounces off all the things rightly and then it'll come back to me.
No, everyone probably doesn't think that. Not in that way, though.
Right.
You know, right. It goes back to what you're saying. Maybe it's what will everyone think of me and how awesome I am. Like,
sure.
What makes me look awesome? And that goes yeah. back to the goodness, right?
Yeah.
What makes me appear good?
You're like, no, not everyone feels that way.
I'm just, you know, presenting a different.
No, that's totally fine.
A different perspective.
And I mean, I'm speaking for those who are familiar with the Enneagram, like as an Enneagram one, right? Who's just obsessive about this whole question, which is why I have such strong feelings about y'all. It's a rat race. This has been my whole life. Just don't do it.
Right? Okay. Don't. It's a rat race, but how do we navigate it? Mm-hmm. I want to pause 1 second before I at least kind of present an opinion about that or a solution, an answer. I want to go back to the whole notion of obstacles. The book that you were mentioning before, mm-hmm. where it's like the white perspective and the black and brown and other mm-hmm. perspective, right? Mm-hmm. It seems to me that certain people or certain people groups can have a stronger character building experience because they are faced with so much more adversity. And it begs the question then, does another people group become completely void of this character building experience mm-hmm. because of the power structure that exists that almost, it doesn't prohibit it. It actually, like the more power you have, the more I think you are faced with these questions of, or you have these obstacles that or barriers that you're presented. But because you have the power, there's this practice of bursting through mm-hmm. and not considering the consequences right. because you don't have to because you're on the right. top of the right. you're the fattest rat in the race, which may not work as well if you're racing.
Well, kind of what you're saying, right? Like privilege protects you from consequences. Mm. And so even in technically adverse circumstances, mm-hmm. the threat of real life consequences is not as present. Mm-hmm. And I think that that changes the equation. So I totally don't hear you saying, right? Like people who faced a lot of adversity have all the character, right? And people whose lives are fairly privileged as wrote, like don't have character.
No.
But trying to parse out what is the effect on our lives when we experience disparate proportions of accountability mm-hmm. And some even beyond accountability, adding on discrimination on one end and just like total lack of consequences on the other end of the spectrum, right?
Yeah, if you want to look at yesterday as an example. Complete lack of consequences. You know, there's an... And so when you're not asked to account for, your actions, mm-hmm. it then becomes nearly impossible to develop character.
Right.
Because the component that you bring in is accountability. Mm-hmm. It's not just facing adversity, but it's being accountable for decisions that you make, mm-hmm. whether deemed or evaluated as good or as bad. I'm positive or negative, right? It's, I have to answer to someone. And if I have to answer to someone, I want to be able to stand by it. Now, if you're not accountable to anyone because you're part of the power structure, then you're missing that whole component of the character building mm-hmm. that is needed. So that's on a more, I guess, in an earthly sense, like a more one-on-one or human dynamic, right?
Sure.
So when we think about this theologically, the accountability is to God. So if we're saying that we're believers, or if you have a religion in which you believe, but we're being very specific about Christianity because, you know, we're both Christian ministers.
That's our area of expertise.
That's what I know best.
Yeah.
Then the goodness isn't what we're concerned with because we say God is good. God is the goodness and God is who I'm accountable to. Mm-hmm. And if I'm accountable to God and God is structuring my actions or God is guiding and leading me in life and in what I do, it filters then out to how I treat other people. Mm-hmm. And so then it's, again, the concern isn't, do you think that I'm good? The concern is, how is my relationship with God? And is God working good in my life? Mm-hmm. And I don't think we see it that way. Even as Christians, I think we take a very secular approach to character, to the notion of goodness, to that rat race, right? Mm-hmm. Because the rat race is when we're competing on a secular level, when we're not incorporating God into the mix, when God is maybe an afterthought, if at all. So we're nominal Christians, we're Christians in name, but when it comes to actual praxis, when it comes to actually practicing it, we're at a loss.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of that, especially in the Christian tradition, gets tangled up with, well, if I'm not good, then I'm bad. Mm-hmm. Right. And just the kind of like, oh, duality, right? So exhausting. I had a employer once who, when she was really frustrated with something, she's like, oh, it just makes my ass tired. That's how I feel about duality. Where it's sort of like the threat becomes, I either need to claim that I'm good or I'm bad. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of gross too, right? Mm-hmm. If I can't say that I'm good, then we all have to acknowledge that we're bad. And like that confirms all of our deepest fears about ourselves or mm-hmm. what, you know, like, oh gosh, I don't want to be bad. And
not now.
I know.
Not now, okay. You know, not right now.
Well, Christianity has a rough history with telling people that they're evil, right? Of just kind of like,
oh, you're going to hell.
You're fundamentally disgusting.
Like, you're literally going to, like those words, you are going to hell. Like,
right. And you'll never be good, but, you know, at least God is good. And so it's like, how do we find our healthy way forward?
Yeah.
That is absolutely, I agree with that. What you're saying is fixating on our own goodness is not actually a Christian, I mean, a spiritually, religiously Christian value.
No.
It's not to claim that people are good beyond the fact that, you know, in Genesis 1, of course, when God creates, right? God says this is good. So, but that doesn't mean like everything, I gave everything really good character. But beloved, right? Like good in my eyes, I love this, mm-hmm. right? So to be careful to what nobody is saying, right? That people aren't good in that way, that God doesn't love us or God doesn't love you or God's like, ew, gross. Why did I make you? That
was why?
Which is another reason. I mean, language is A, so important and B, so opaque. Mm. I'm so frustrated with words because they're slippery. Mm-hmm. And one person can say good and mean A, and then it's like, oh, I'm hearing you say that people are evil. And it's like, no, that's not.
Yes. We talk about the binary. For me, I think a lot of times I reside in the in-between space when it comes to, if I have to evaluate. Mm-hmm. Whether I'm good or not. I know originally I was like, well, I don't have to be good. Like, I don't have to be labeled as good.
Right.
Because if me doing evil at all then negates the good, then it means that, no, I'm not good. But I think it's more, less a preoccupation with being good or bad, but then being in that in-between space when mm-hmm. and understanding that you have the capacity to be both. And that's what life, well, I guess, I don't know. I don't know about if this is substantiated by others, but this is what I'm saying. Life on earth is about that in-between space and that we're choosing regularly which one will be our final state. Mm-hmm. And so right now it's, yes, we do good and we do bad. Our being is still being decided upon in a sense, right? If we claim Christ, we can be sure that our being will eventually get to be good, like, right?
Well, it's like, so Martin Luther would say simultaneously saint and sinner.
Yeah, right.
The bothness.
And that's what it is. So yeah, see, it's not just me coming up with this.
No. You're in good, in strong company.
Yes, I'm a reformist. I'm reformed.
Come to our side.
Yes. Presbyterians are reformed. We're good. We're in a reformed tradition. But you get my point, right?
Yeah,
it's not, you know, it's not this either or that people are consistently wedging themselves into. Mm-hmm. And you know, that talks about like the non-binary, but in like not a spiritual, not in a spiritual way, right? It's non-binary, you know, gender and whatnot. But there's this non-binary in our existence in general, where it's not all or nothing when it comes to who and who we are, how we become there in the character building, right? Mm-hmm. The all or nothing is in our allegiance. Like either we're giving our all to God or, you know, that half stuff isn't it. You know, it's, I give my whole self to God. God doesn't want half of me. God doesn't want a piece of me. God wants all of me. And that goes back to that good, which the good part, and he made them good. Like mm-hmm. we were created good. I don't know how many times I've heard people reference that text as for why they're currently good or for why human beings are currently good. That's because creative. We were created good. God said, and it was good.
Yeah.
Yes. Notice when that is said. It said before sin happened. And it said before the full history of humankind, you know? And it's not to say that God would be like, oh, you wretched beings. But there are instances when God says that. Like, why did I create you? And so when God says,
there was a flood.
Like, there are these interruptions in human procreation throughout history, right? As the Bible retells it. And it's, or relates it. And it's like, well, if we're good, then why would this be necessary? And so to say, and we're good because God created us, is I need a fuller understanding from you of of what goodness is and where it comes from and how we achieve it, if we achieve it.
Yeah. Speaking of it as a state of being, I liked your reference to like, it's not important to me to be labeled good because I automatically imagined one of those like little name tags on your shirt, just like good. Like, oh, are we doing that now? Get my good name tag. It'd be great. Right. As if it's a state,
mm-hmm.
right? You can be good or you cannot be good. Mm-hmm. And again, this question of is that an internal reality that mm-hmm. I'm good, or is that the way that I am externalizing myself in the world that is good?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, as you were saying, kind of what it means to be simultaneously saint and sinner, to be every single human being does wrongly by themselves and other people. So, I mean, there is nobody walking this planet who's just like, I got this all figured out.
We're good.
I am synced into every subjective perception and I will never wrong anyone. I mean, of course we do.
Mm-hmm.
We do. And the average person that I know does also have empathy and cares about other people and wants to do right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we walk that bothness all the time. And what I was thinking about is the word ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Right? About what does it mean to discern morality in context? Right? And I think sometimes we talk about these huge sweeping moral statements without bringing them down to earth to be like, but what would this look like in mm-hmm. this context? And what would this look like in this context? And so we're all navigating every single day, situational ethics every day. And it just seems to me like this full circle back to questions about adversity and consequences and accountability and how the system is stacked differently for different people
mm-hmm.
in that navigation and how that impacts who we become in the world tangibly, mm-hmm. how we pour ourselves out into the world energetically. It's a really interesting, I wish that there were students here talking about it with us actually, because I'd love to hear what they're thinking about these questions and how they see that in their mm-hmm. own lives, right? Like, how did my parents raise me, holding me accountable or not accountable mm-hmm. to certain things at age appropriate times.
Yes.
With my 4-year-old, right? I ask myself this all the time, right? Like, how do I hold her accountable in an age appropriate way to what's going on and not push for more accountability than I should expect from a 4-year-old,
mm-hmm.
but not deprive her of the opportunity
mm-hmm.
to build character in a given situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
Yeah, I'm good. Any final thoughts?
Oh, goodness. I'm really glad that you had this topic in mind. And I think that it really sent tendrils mm-hmm. into a lot of different directions. And I think for me, my takeaway is this question of where we devote our lives. Mm-hmm. And Paul Tillich is a theologian who's been pretty influential in my formation. And he talks about the definition of God basically being what you center in your life.
Mm.
And so if you center a divine being who is benevolent and wants to work good in you, then that's your God. If you identify your own image and success at the center of your being, that is your God. And it was really like, oh dear.
I love that response.
Oh dear. That's my last word.
I want to end on, oh dear. For today's listening pleasure, we have a group who we've heard before, Jamel Jones and Freed, with the song The Greatest. My name is Carolyn Lawson.
And I'm Claire Joseph Meyer.
Have a good one. Come on, if you believe it, join with us and say it. Oh! Come on. Looking back now. Looking back now. How I made it through. Still here. I'm still here because of you. I thought it was over. But Lord, you made a way. Lord, you made a way. The way of escape. Oh, looking back now. I didn't have a clue, no. All I could do was put my trust in you.
His grace. Therefore, I'm determined. Yeah.